Rudy was very mechanistic in his approach to spiritual work. He really focused a lot on the chakra system, and he often described what we do in terms of plumbing. I was not ever mechanistic, and I had no sense of plumbing. But I took what he said as in a kind of abstract sort of understanding of spiritual practice. Somehow, the idea particularly of drilling was very visually and somehow emotionally significant to me. Moving deeply into something, penetrating, being able to tap into the energy of the chakras. And then, as I was teaching today, suddenly the entire metaphor of the Gulf oil spill came into play in a very big way. And the idea of leakage and the idea of capping leaks. And I really understood for the first time, bless you, I understood for the first time why this oil spill has been such a profoundly disturbing thing for the public. Because it's not just about the fouling of our environment. It really relates to something profoundly real in all of us, which is how many of us are leaking internally. And how incapable we feel of plugging the leaks. How impossible it seems to be able to go into the depth of our own chakras, our own psychic system, and plug these tiny holes that are just bleeding us dry in one way or another. And although I think most people would never understand this image personally, in a way, having a spiritual practice at least conveys the possibility of what I'm talking about. I think in some unspoken, unvisualized way, people know exactly what I'm saying. The leakages occur in so many different parts of the psyche. And we are aware of them in terms of a sense of depletion. Part of us is not being held together. We're spilling out. And you can almost address it chakra by chakra. But I should also say that spillage is only one metaphor. A lot of these chakras are, for many of us, huge, untapped wells of energy that have never been fully drilled into, that have never been fully explored, that have never been tapped for the wealth of energy that they have available to us. So we are a contradiction of forms. We have parts of us that are spilling and fouling our own environment, and we have parts of us that are left completely unavailable to us because we don't want to go there, because there's work involved, because we understand that there is a kind of fragility to the ecosystem of our own nature, and that drilling into some of these spaces can release energies under enormous pressure. And so a lot of us keep those energies in check and don't use them for our lives. So let me just talk about these for a moment. The chakra, thousand-petaled lotus on the top of your head, most people don't have to deal with because there isn't a lot of psychic spiritual work going on in the world, and the opening of that chakra really does release you into something that is beyond the physical, beyond the body, beyond the materialistic dimension of our lives. This is really what releases you into God consciousness, universal consciousness, into oneness. It doesn't happen often. And to talk about it in the mass consciousness doesn't mean a lot because most people don't know what you're talking about. During the 60s, when we had drugs to blast you through that space, it suddenly became a really interesting dialogue. What is this? Where am I? How did this happen? What's going on? Blasting out rather unconsciously and not unlike what's happening with the Gulf oil spill. We were blasting into something vast, and a few people would begin to try to harness that energy. Many people were just bleeding into it. And for most of us who are in a spiritual practice today, that energy awakened us to something that we didn't even know was there and remains in many ways a directive in our lives. It's in a way why a lot of people come here, because either through a drug experience or through some cosmological confluence of energies, this thing opened up and you said, what is this and what do I do with it? And you've come to a practice. There are lots of practices now in the world, more than there ever were, because people have begun to experience this shooting out of energy into the cosmic plane and trying to either put a cap on it or learn how to use it well. But again, it's a very small portion of the population doing that. The third eye chakra, which has to do with knowledge, wisdom, intellect, is for many people a highly unrefined energy experience. We are, in a sense, constantly taking in energy through media now of unbelievable proportions. We have so much energy feeding into our third eye intellectual system that we can barely process it. And what comes back out of that chakra tends to be fairly undigested for many people. We don't want to put the rigor of effort involved into deeply understanding what is evolving in this space. And so we have, in a sense, the endless gossip column of the third eye. Energy, simple energy in and out, uncontrolled, just speaking its own voice, without any kind of control, any kind of discipline, any kind of sense of purpose. Even in the school systems, you know, today, the rigor of forming that energy, of having it become well-spoken, intellectually rigorous, is barely happening. And so the whole dynamic of appreciation of mind has weakened dramatically in our culture to the point where it's even ridiculed. Trying to get this energy to function properly is hard enough without having a whole society that basically says, ha, it's meaningless, we don't need this, we don't respect it, we don't trust it. And so learning to control and work with third eye energy, and it's only intellect in the world, I have to say that when it goes deeper in spiritual terms, when it really digs deep, it's wisdom. And getting to wisdom is a refining of this energy. Refining energy is very much part of the whole sort of metaphor of the oil system. And it's very intriguing that what we call unrefined energy is crude energy. crude oil, crude energy, is energy that's not yet worked properly so that it can really function to actually drive a car or help lead a life. So many of us are left with enormous crudity in our use of the energy of mind. Throat energy, ego energy, basically the expression of the self, is for many people a uncontrolled, undisciplined expression of I. And because most people don't know who they are, who I am, the endless noise, the chatter that comes out of ego presentation is so unformed that it can't attract reasonable dialogue, reasonable interaction. So you can't get, and you can't get help from the world because you can't even express clearly that you need it. When you can get to a place in your ego mind that says, I truly don't know who I am or what's going on here, I need help, that simple expression can bring back an energy force that can allow this chakra to become very vulnerable, very real, very open, and can begin to have a dialogue in the world that allows you to come to know yourself. When this dialogue is not present, it becomes harsh, it becomes rash, it becomes complicated, it creates tension, it creates drama, it creates misery in the world. When it becomes refined, it becomes honest, true, vulnerable, available, open, even truthful in its expression. Getting to that level of refinement takes a certain kind of willingness to be perceived as imperfect, to be perceived as a true human being. The false human being projects a sense of, I know who I am, I know what I'm doing, I'm in charge, I've got it together, everything is working for me, I dress right, I act right, I am the master of my world. That's the projection. Reality, none of us have a clue. None of us have a clue. And when you realize that and express that, you can begin a dialogue with others that will allow you to search for what is real and what is true. And that's when humanity really expresses itself. Heart chakra. Heart chakra in most people, it's so hard to get the heart open. It's so hard to drill into the depth of heart. A lot of us flash heart open in a kind of momentary way where we go, oh, I love you. But then you say, what does that love entail? What does real love entail? And what it entails is depth and consistency. If you had an oil well that flushed out a tiny little bit, oh, I love you, you couldn't drill that well because it wouldn't support anything. It would just create momentary blips of energy. That energy doesn't provide at all to make anything function. To really get the heart chakra to be meaningful in human life, it has to constantly be there. It has to open and flow and be available to all who need it. And for that to take place, it really has to open up to you. You have to be able to feel love for yourself, or for being, or for God, or for whatever it is that keeps it open. And when it's truly open, it becomes one of the truly great sources of energy on the planet. Energy that will feed and nurture far more people than you can even imagine in your thinking or in your dreams. It just flows, and people around you become served by this energy, even in the sweetest, simplest ways. And I've talked about this, I always refer to the checkout counter at the supermarket. Just keeping your heart open and letting it flow serves the person who's checking you out at the supermarket. And they smile at you, and you exchange content, and they feel better. And they take that and probably pass it along to the next 20 or 30 people in line. You have just helped bring something real, an energy force of love and content and kindness and sweetness and compassion into the world. That's what you've done. If you do that all day long, imagine the value of that heart chakra that's inside you working. And then imagine when it's closed. It's a resource totally unused. It doesn't function. And in most people, it doesn't function, or it's inconstant and creates untrustworthy love. An energy source that isn't there when you need it. You know, it's sort of like a generator that sometimes functions. Not so valuable. Navel chakra, you know, work in the world, getting stuff done. The navel chakra is the stuff of making life happen, manifesting things in the world. If your navel chakra is working, you function well in the world. If it is not working, you break down regularly. Or you have things that you want to do that you never do. You have a life you want to live that you don't live. And so you walk around in a state of misery and unhappiness because all you have is dreams and wishes and ideas and no realization. Realization is something happening. Result is what Rudy called it, result. If you have no result, you are frustrated. And if you're frustrated, that works through the whole system and it just plugs you up. And there is no flow. There's no energy. So you have to drill very, very deep into the navel chakra. And if you want to use an image of drilling very deep, just look in the newspaper today and watch what they're doing, going down all of these miles into this tiny little tube, miles under the surface of the ocean and the Earth's crust, to cap a tiny well. That is exactly the kind of mechanism that you need in terms of consciousness to move down, 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 down. And then you have to use almost this robotic knowing, this thing of this just going down, down, down into this tiny little place inside you that is either not working yet or has access to a vast well of energy, hopefully a well of energy that you will be able to cap well when you need it, and you will be able to open when you want it, and you'll be able to go down into this extraordinary space and bring this energy up and refine this energy, and we'll talk about refining it in a second, but you'll be able to go down into this space and drill into the very source of vibrancy in yourself, and you'll be able to use it regularly for your manifestation in the world. That's both manifestation of real world outcome and it's manifestation of spiritual outcome. Because that's the energy that drives it all. It's powerful. Then you get into the sex chakra. The sex chakra, we all know its power. Everyone knows its power. And it's so beyond us on so many levels. It arises so often in spite of us, if you will. It can drive the entire mechanism of a human being in both wonderful ways and in very destructive ways. It's very dynamic energy. It may be the most dynamic energy that we have in material sense. Sexual energy is the energy of life and recreation of life. The recreation of life biologically and the recreation of life spiritually. Tapping into that energy is what makes spiritual rebirth possible. That makes awakening possible. That energy is vital to us. And so for people who are able to use it well, it has great vitality. For people who are afraid of it, who cap it off and lock it away, for people who deny its existence, it becomes this unused, untapped renewal. And so you have to, as a full human being, open and tap into all of these chakras. They have to all be available. They have to all be working at depth. Or part of you is cut off from who you are. And then finally, the real refining element of all of this is at the base of the spine. The very tip of the coccyx bone is this kundalini energy, and I call it the energy of awe or the uprising energy. And when you get to the energy at the base of the spine, this is where all of these energy sources, or each individual energy source, comes down and becomes activated and refined in such a way that it now is able to rise up the entire system, up the spine, and break through out of this upper thousand-petaled lotus chakra at the top of your head and bring you into God consciousness, wholeness, oneness, completeness, absolute sense of self. When that energy is working and when it's flowing, you become, as Rudy said, a human being. A human being is an active engagement of all of these energy centers, and the energy is working without spilling. It's working without getting plugged up. It's working without holding it in place. It's alive. It's flowing. It's dynamic. And it fills you and flows through you, and you become a manifestation of the energy. It moves you. It is responsible for everything, and you become, if you will, a servant of that energy. But mostly, you become, Rudy called it a pipe. You're just the vessel through which it flows. And as that vessel, you become, you realize as it happens, you become completely yourself. Because yourself isn't the pipe, yourself is the energy that moves through the pipe. And you become a pure expression of that energy. So what happens in this classroom when we're sitting here, and we come here, and you guys drive all these miles to sit down and feel the energy? And often what happens when people come here is they sit down, and what they feel is possibly the energy, maybe big flow in their heart or their big navel chakra, and feel very powerful and very strong, or they feel some kind of movement up through the spine and some content of expression of godliness in them, in their lives. But often what you feel when you come to sit here is where it's not working. The obstruction, the thing that is somehow blocked, rusted, decayed, unused, forgotten, whatever it is, you sit here, it ain't working. And you sit with the teacher. And the teacher supposedly is someone where it is working. And one of the great gifts of being a teacher, I have to say, is that God doesn't care about you at all, but he cares about everybody else in the class. And so you, for the period of teaching anyway, become a complete vessel of that energy. Not for you, although you benefit, but because everyone around you needs that energy, needs that exceedingly conscious flow of energy. And I should add that energy has as a very extraordinary component consciousness, meaning that you are aware of it. Unconscious energy is meaningless. Conscious energy is everything. The only difference between conscious and unconscious energy is that unconscious energy you don't know is there. Conscious energy you feel. How do you feel it? In two ways. One, through flow. Two, through lack of flow. Lack of flow means it's trying to flow but it can't. Flowing is obvious, and unconscious energy is not even available to you to work with. So the value of a class, especially a class like this, is that you sit with a teacher and you have eyes open connection, so there's some kind of human exchange going on here as well as spiritual. If you're not looking away, closing your eyes, or pretending this isn't really going on, if you're really present in the moment, and after I stare at you for 10 minutes, it's pretty hard to avoid me for the whole 10 minutes, something starts to happen. And what starts to happen for me is I start to feel very directly where the obstruction in you is. It isn't like I'm guessing. It's like I feel it. It's right there. And so what I do, and I really understood it today, is I'm just like the guys controlling that robot, going down, 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 and moving these extraordinarily distant little pieces under the ocean to cap something if it's a leak. And believe me, I sit with a lot of you and I see leaks. I go in there and I go, this thing is just gushing away, you know? Your emotions are gushing away, you know, your self-hatred is gushing away, whatever it is, it's... And I have to go in there, and I have to, just like these guys up on that, on the, wherever they are that are doing it, I have to go down into that space and find the mechanism that will plug it up. And it's an operation exactly like the one they're using. It's delicate. And if you plug it up wrong, what happens is the whole system could explode elsewhere because the pressure can be so great. So you have to trust this unbelievably quiet and refined mechanism in yourself as a teacher, to know where it's going, to enter into that spot and let it do what it needs to do. And it really is delicate, delicate operation. But it works, and you go down into these spaces just like a plumber in a grosser way. But this is much more subtle. You go down into that space, and you make these little movements, and you do the thing that has to be done. In some cases, it's not plugging; it's drilling. It's going through until you get this thing opens up, and I feel it. It just tells me, oh, there it is. It opened. It's starting to flow. You know, it's not about capturing it for me at that point or creating the system, because there's really a system there. You just have to get it going into the chakra system, and it starts to flow. And if there's no leakage, if it's working properly, then you walk out of this room with something in play that wasn't in play when you walked in. And the class has had an effect. It has had value because it allows flow to emerge. And that flow will start to function for you, especially if you become aware of it. If you become aware of it, it becomes conscious energy. And when it's conscious, you start to be able to go, oh, it's flowing. Oh, it's not flowing. And you take responsibility for it. And what happens then when you sit down to meditate on your own is you go through and you go, everything, you feel open, and then you feel not open. So where does the work start? Right there. You go right to the place that's not open, and you just sit there. And what do? Well, Rudy said, you ask for help to surrender, which means to not hold it closed, or to not fight it, or not to be in the way, or not to be unconscious. And what happens is you start to feel into it, and if you don't run from it, it relaxes. The drilling happens. You feel yourself entering into it, and it opens up. And there's flow. And then you've got another half hour to sit, so you just go deeper. You can go deeper into that space, or you can go down into the next part of the flow, into your lower chakras, or you start to feel this whole energy moving through your entire body, or your whole body as an energy flow, because your body is energy. And you just sit there being aware of this energy, being conscious of energy, and you begin to sense yourself not as this physical dynamic, but as a kind of energy or spiritual energy dynamic. And that energy has as its most conscious element a sense of unbelievable deliciousness, unbelievable quality, high energy quality. And it's so wonderful, it's so beautiful, it's so enriching, it's so enlivening, it's so vibrant, it's so full of love, it's so full of optimism, it's so full of the joy of being, that you do not want to do or be anywhere else. You just want to sit in it, to bathe in it, to be of it. Because the more you relax into it, the more the boundaries that you would call you dissolve, and you just become one with all that there is. That's the work we're doing. That's the process. What's the value of becoming one with all there is? Well, I kind of see it working on occasion, like we were at a party yesterday. And I just felt the being that was emanating from me was moving from person to person to person and functioning, serving everybody around me. It was just serving. And that's all it did. It had a dialogue with everybody. It presented itself. Occasionally I was back into Bruce Rubin and just like, oh God, I'm at this party. And then it opened up again, and I was at the party. And it wasn't Bruce so much, it was the energy. And it was working. And it just was serving and serving and serving and serving. And everyone who came in touch with it walked away with something. I could feel it. And they weren't spiritual students. Some were friends, some were people who I hardly know. But I couldn't believe the power of the energy. It was so extraordinarily beautiful. People coming over and hugging me over and over again. And I could tell they were getting it. They were just getting it. And I was just this fountain of energy, and I was available. And that's what we can do. And what do you feel when you do that? You feel connected to the universe in a way that is profound and humbling, and it's the best word for it is grateful. You just feel grateful. And that's what it does. Does it do more than that? I don't know. To me, that's more than enough. So that's the spiritual life, and it's a life that comes from this mechanistic thing of sitting down, going inside, feeling the system as best you can, and again, you will feel it either as flow or as obstruction. And the deeper you go, the more you will feel, and you will start to be aware of energies you didn't even know were there. And you will just go, wow. Or you get to be like Rudy. I mean, Rudy used to have, he had vision upon vision of stuff going on in his practice. And it just came from depth, deeper and deeper opening to what is. And each one of us has the capacity to do it. Each one of us here is training to do it. And either you're choosing to go along with the ride or you're not. It makes me think, if you keep appearing here, that you're on board. If you don't keep appearing here, then you're kind of, well, settled for something. But as long as you're here, the opportunity exists for this thing to keep working until you're completely responsible for it on your own. So, as I always say at the end of these talks, I'm grateful you're here because I get to observe it working. I get to observe it in play, and I get to be part of some process that I don't understand on any level, but it's the most beautiful thing I get to watch in my life. So thank you for coming. Any questions about this stuff?
I have a thought about Rudy's visions. He said he had these visions constantly. Was he sort of in an awake state?
No, absolutely.
That's not what I mean. I mean, I have a tendency to sort of drift off sometimes. And thoughts are coming to me that I'm wondering if there are other people's thoughts in the room or something, or where these are coming from. Because I have no connection to any of these thoughts, as far as I can tell.
I mean, you can have visions, if you will, that are sort of dreamlike, and you can have visions that are very clear, very specific, and quite immediate. What you come away with a lot of the time, and it varies completely from person to person. Some people have none of this at all, which is, believe me, it's fine, because visions can be, you know, unsettling, and people don't always know how to deal with them. But if you're really in a spiritual path and these clarities arise, or these images arise that explain the nature of your work to you, you learn a lot. And Rudy had, you know, he had unbelievable stuff. He saw dragons, you know, underneath him, underneath the earth. He saw, you know, lines of angels and beings, you know, of other dimensions working. And you know, I used to always go, wow, you know, that must be, what will it be like when I get there? But I do get there, but it's very different for me. It's very different. I don't have magical, phantasmagoric images. I have what I call clarities, deep perceptions that just line up in a way that shock me. They're just like so true, so real, so absolute. And that's my vision. I get to look, I can look at each of you, and I do, and your entire cosmology, if you will, opens to me. And I get you. I get you in the way you want to get you. And then I try to help you get to that. And I can't even tell you often what it is, because you would be frightened to know that anybody saw that or knows that. But for me, there's no judgment. It's not judgmental. Because if it was judgmental, I couldn't do it. Judgment separates you from the experience. It's just observation, pure, clear observation. And you get to see where people are shut down, where they're hiding, where they're running away from you and everybody else. You get to see it with absolute clarity. I can't even tell them, because the shame or whatever it is would be so profound that it would just obstruct further any kind of effort to help. So you just keep working at it. And partly what you do, which I've realized, is you just love them anyway. If you just love people anyway, they're safe enough to let that stuff start to melt away. But it takes time. Effort over time was Rudy's equation for all this. And so you have to be unbelievably patient. And if you don't have a spiritual life, then you just do it in your married life, or in your friendship life, or whatever life you have. You do it there. You stay consistent and available to people, and slowly they trust you, and they become real with you. They become honest. And all of these areas of obscurity and a difficulty for them start to become spoken about, acknowledged, and released. That's what a good shrink does. They just sit there long enough for you to trust them. And then slowly you just say all this stuff, and just saying it releases it. It's no longer held in check. And it's beautiful when it happens. It's absolutely beautiful when you finally say to somebody, I'm not perfect. I'm scared. I need help. I don't know what to do next. I know it sounds like some kind of awful human failure to do that, but in the end, it's just really human, period. And not doing that is where people get in trouble. They go out and kill people, or live lives of desperation. George.
The techniques of yoga have been around for 4,000 or 5,000 years.
Absolutely.
So where do we go wrong? Holding our desire to perfection ourselves?
No, going wrong is
we usually escape from the work.
There's so many ways we go wrong. One of them is being lazy. One of them is being in denial. One of them is, you know, giving voice to it and not giving truth, not really doing it, you know. I mean, there's so many ways to pretend you're doing something and not do it. Our ways of self-delusion. The numbers of delusions are beyond counting, and we just do it because we're afraid, and because we're lazy, and
stuck on losing your energy.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's a whole other one. You only have, I mean, not that you have so much energy, because there's ultimately infinite energy in you, but most of your energies are worldly energy. Let's say they're pockets of energy that just go off into into stuff. If you're literally sitting watching 4 television shows and the news at night, every night, all of your energy is going into that, as if, you know, any one of those television shows needs your energy. You know, and the news does. I mean, the news does unbelievable things to you. Even the news that, you know, people watch the news that affirms their belief system. But even that just takes you, like, spins you around. Yes, yes, no, no, anger, hatred. They're terrible. You know, it just depletes energy. Unless you can be just like, oh, you just watch it, and then it's like, I see what they're doing. Not that I'm engaged by it, but I am informed by it. Not informed by the information, but by the energy of the actual experience of watching the newscast and watching your body relate to it. That's really awakening. Very different than unconsciously just being in it. So consciousness, you know, I mean, consciousness is such a funny thing. All it is awareness. Awareness means you're aware of it. So if you're aware of what you're doing, it becomes conscious. If you're unaware of it, it's just bleeding all over the place. And most of us bleed hourly. And so we don't get anywhere. We don't move forward in our lives because we're not committed. And if you're not committed, well, first of all, you don't have much of a life. You know? Or you'll have a whole life in one area. I see that all the time. I see somebody who's truly committed to the work, to their job. And their job's doing fine. But their relationships are falling apart, and they have no friends, and, you know, on and on and on, because they put all their energy in one place. You don't have to do that. Your energy can go here and 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 have what Rudy called a full life. Such a full life that it brings unbelievable richness and joy. That's what we're all capable of. And what we get is based on how much what we do. What's the effort you're willing to make or not make?
The price you have to pay.
Yeah, no. And Rudy would tell you, I know he would say this, the price you have to pay is everything. You pay everything. And to most of us, that's like, I can't do that. Everything? That's the answer.
Or we sit around saying, well, this guy got that.
Rudy paid a full price, and he was a remarkable teacher as a result of that. And he's basically telling us to do the same thing. And, you know, the older we get, you know, certainly I'm starting to watch the process of aging, you know, it's going to take it anyway. It's going to take everything. And either you give it gently or graciously and lovingly, or you sit there and miserly watch it pulled away and accuse everybody of stealing your stuff, you know, which is what people do. So, you know, we're all on this. This is an amazing ride, this life journey. It's really amazing, and it's most amazing to me as you draw toward the end of it, because that's when it all comes into perspective, and because you're smart enough, hopefully, to make some quick changes and really dig deep. I mean, it's great that you've had a spiritual life that's for your whole life, pretty much. I mean, since I've known you, we were in our 20s. You know, that's a long time to build a base. Now's the time to really, really do it. Because what else do we have? You know, what's left? You know, you don't want to start a new business. I know you don't. You know, can you imagine that? And the kids are on their own, you know, and I know they still demand stuff, but it's like, that's no longer the focus. What's the focus? What's left? This is left. And do it, or as they say, come back and start all over, and you'll build a business and you'll have the kids and you'll do the same thing, and you'll still come to this moment where you have, someone will say to you 20 lifetimes from now, this is the time. Do it now. Or not. You know, I mean, Buddha said you can go through millions of lifetimes before you finally go, oh, this is the moment. So, your choice. And we all, that's the great gift of human life. It's your choice. Any other questions? Okay. Love you all.